Hello, I'm Ed, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 12th of May 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Colin, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a look at superstitions, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, information about Marcus Gunn syndrome, and rounding all that off, one of Graham Fisher's Tales from the Barn. But first, an observation. The official date for this episode is the 12th of May 2021. However, if you type this out as a purely numerical date, you might notice something. Like the word race car or the band name ABBA, the date for this episode is a palindrome. That means it can be read the same forward as it can backward. So take ABBA for example. This is spelt AB and then BA, with the letters being mirrored. The date for this episode is then a palindrome. It is the 12th of the 5th, 21, read forward, and it is also the same read backwards. Interesting that. Now we start with some local news, brought to us by Ian, Ed, Angela, Liz, and starting us off, it's Christine.
Andy Street will serve a second term as West Midlands Mayor after comfortably holding off the challenge of Labour. The former John Lewis boss won on second preference ballots after falling just short of the 50% vote required to claim a first round victory. The Conservative received 314,669 votes over the two rounds, which put him 47,043 ahead of Labour's Liam Byrne after the runoff and saw him increase his vote share from 50.4% in 2017 to 54% this year. Steve Caldwell of the Green Party came third with 35,559 votes, while Lib Dem Jenny Wilkinson was fourth on 21,836. And Reform UK's Pete Durnall brought up the rear on 13,568. Following his victory, Mr. Street said he was committed to making a fast start on spearheading the region's post-pandemic recovery. He said, "We've got no time to waste in addressing some of the underlying issues that have been exposed by COVID. But equally, there is absolutely no question that this place will bounce back strongly and that we will create what I call a dynamic, meritocratic and of course inclusive society." Mr. Byrne said the result was a bitter blow. "This defeat is my responsibility," he added. "In the weeks ahead, I'll tell the full astonishing story of this groundbreaking campaign, but today I simply say this, do not be downhearted, because if we lose heart, our country loses hope. We may have lost a battle today, but there will be no surrender in our fight to build back stronger and fairer and greener."
The blue surge continued across the Black Country as the Tories made huge gains on all four councils in the local elections. On a disastrous day for the Labour Party, the Conservatives seized overall control in Dudley, gaining 12 seats in the result, which marks the party's best ever performance in the borough. In Walsall, the Tories tightened their grip on power by gaining 5 seats. The Conservatives took 5 seats off Labour in Wolverhampton and remarkably gained 9 seats in Sandwell, the first Tories to win in the borough for nearly a decade. Across the four boroughs, the Tories gained 31 seats in elections, delayed from last year due to the pandemic. Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley hailed the result, which saw his party land seats in previous Labour strongholds, including Briley Hill, Lye and Quarry Bank and Dudley Wood. His party now holds 46 seats to Labour's 24, which he said made the opposition irrelevant in the council chamber. The Tories benefited from having a really popular Prime Minister like Boris, who people just really like, Mr. Harley added. Dudley North MP Marco Longhi said the results showed people were backing Boris and putting their faith in the Conservatives to help Dudley bounce back from the pandemic. Labour group leader Kadar Zada said the results reflected the national picture, not the local picture, and said his party needed to think of a way how it can listen to people. Wolverhampton's Tory group leader Wendy Thompson said the result, which gives her party 15 seats on the council, was the start of their fight back. The Tories won seats from Labour in Oxley, Maryhill, Penn, Bushbury North and Wensfield South, although Labour won one back by regaining Bilston East.
Labour finally got in the win column after a nightmare set of elections in the West Midlands, with success in the Police and Crimes Commissioner poll. Corbynite lawyer Simon Foster won on second preference ballots, having finished around 37,000 votes ahead of Conservative Jay Singh Sohal in the first round. The PCC role is in line to be scrapped by newly re-elected West Midlands Mayor Andy Street, who wants to bring its powers under the control of the mayoralty. Mr. Foster will succeed former Labour Minister David Jameson, who retired at this election. After his victory, he said that justice will always be his priority and pledged to engage with and listen to communities and people in the West Midlands. Mr. Singh Sohal said he hoped that the new PCC would work to get crime down and make our streets safer. I have no doubt my campaign has shifted the debate onto the need for more robust policing and how necessary it is to increase local community police presence, he added. And I count it as an achievement that a third generation British Sikh from Handsworth can, through hard work and determination, stand before you today, having fulfilled the aspiration of having represented the residents of our diverse region. Voting took place across the 7 West Midlands Combined Authority areas on Thursday, and the result was announced on Monday at the Utility Arena, Birmingham. In the first round, Mr. Foster received 276,743 votes to Army Reservist Mr. Singh Sohal's 239,288 votes. Lib Dem John Hunt was third on 38,594, ahead of Birmingham pub bombings campaigner Julie Hambleton, 27,664, Mark Hoth from Reform UK, 18,002, and We Matter Party candidate Desmond Jaddo, 7,745. The turnout was 31.02%.
A hospital trust board has heard of how a collaborative team effort made a success of its COVID-19 vaccination programme. Executive members of the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust were given details of the scale of the programme by the Vaccination Hub team around the city as part of the Public Trust Board meeting. Matt Wood, operational lead of the programme, said the hub had managed to deliver 17,769 doses over a 4-month window, with a record of 581 doses in one day. Mr. Wood, who is a partner of the Service Efficiency and Delivery team, said his role had been about asking the staff involved in the programme to do the almost impossible. He said, "It's something they have never failed to rise to and deliver during this programme. It's involved sourcing space, making sure the areas are safe, and asking very nicely to borrow other staff from other teams, as well as training them and ensuring everything was in place for the delivery of the programme. The thing I have learned is the importance of teamwork, and particularly how fantastic the staff have been working collaboratively. And what they've delivered over 4 months bears testament to that. Nearly 55,000 Wolverhampton residents now have maximum protection against COVID-19 after receiving both doses of their life-saving vaccine. 130,264 residents have had at least one jab, with a total of 184,648 vaccines now delivered by the city. People aged 40 and over, or who turn 40 by the 1st of July, anyone who is clinically extremely vulnerable, people with learning disabilities, frontline health and social care workers, and people who are in receipt of carer's allowance, or who are the main carer of an elderly or disabled person, are now eligible for the free vaccine. Book now.
A mass vaccination centre at the Black Country Living Museum will only be giving second doses as the programme moves into its second phase. A combination of large-scale vaccination sites, GP practices and local pharmacies have come together over 6 months to deliver more than 913,000 doses of the vaccine so far. Now, some sites have stopped offering first doses and will move out of the vaccination programme after giving their final second dose jabs later this year. These will be replaced with new locations at community pharmacies and more capacity at existing sites. This second phase is part of the plan to enable the NHS to begin restoring services to pre-COVID levels while keeping vaccination capacity the same. The Black Country Living Museum, the area's first large vaccination centre, will continue to offer second doses to all those who received their first dose at the site, but is no longer offering first doses. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for Black and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group and Senior Responsible Officer for the vaccination programme, said, "I want to say a huge thank you to all those working and volunteering at our vaccination sites for making it possible for us to protect so many people in our region in such an incredibly short space of time, with 90% of people aged 45 and over having now had their first dose." Andrew Lovett, BCLM Chief Executive, said, "We're incredibly proud to have played our part in supporting the NHS to inoculate our local community against COVID by hosting the vaccination centre at BCLM. Like many others in the area, I received my first vaccination at the museum and I'm delighted we've had the opportunity to support take-up of the vaccine. As a museum, we commemorate and celebrate the stories of people who have made history. Therefore, I'd like to extend my thanks to all the NHS staff, volunteers and BCLM colleagues who've worked so hard to make the vaccination centre its success. Everyone involved has truly helped to make history in their efforts to protect the health of our community."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre, back with another roundup of everything that's been happening at the charity. First up this week, there's no place like home, right? Whether you're starting out in your first property or after a post-lockdown new look, our Wolverhampton Clearing Centre can help you transform your abode. We've got everything you need to turn your place from drab to fab, and all for bargain prices, with sofas starting from, are you ready for it, £10? You'll find us on Lower Walsall Street and we're open 9:30am until 5pm Monday to Saturday and 10am until 2pm on Sundays. And we're COVID secure, so you can shop with confidence. This week, we'd also like to say a special thank you to the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport and Good Things Foundation. Thanks to their Digital Lifeline scheme, we've been able to distribute 16 tablets to our members who weren't able to get online because they didn't have the right equipment or skills. It will make such a difference for them, as it's never been more important to be digitally connected. Next up this week, we've launched a new campaign to encourage people to collect some small change and make a big difference for someone with sight loss. Our fundraisers say the Loose Change campaign gives people the chance to support someone in need without having to take part in a large fundraising event. All you have to do is empty your pockets, check down the back of your sofa, or even put a few pence aside every time you do something you're trying to avoid, even yawning in an online meeting. You can collect money in your own jars or get a Beacon branded box for free from the charity. Even just a few pounds could make a real difference, as £3 could fund 15 minutes of low vision advice, and if everyone who lived locally to Beacon donated £5, the charity would raise £1.3 million. That's enough to keep it running for a whole year. The Beacon Centre's engagement manager, Sophie Higgins, said, "Beacon is exceptionally lucky to have some amazing supporters, and we really hope that people can back our latest campaign and use their small change to make a big difference for somebody with sight loss." If you want to get involved, you can get your Beacon branded collection box by just emailing your name and address to supportus@beaconvision.org. That's supportus@beaconvision.org. Alternatively, you could always give us a ring as well on 01902 880 111 Monday to Friday. To finish this week, we'd like to send our warmest wishes to everyone who's been marking Eid on May the 12th. We know that celebrations won't be quite the same as usual, but we hope you have a blessed time with loved ones. Eid Mubarak. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to catch up with you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Helen. Thanks for that. Coming up next, we have some more local news.
A trade union has raised concerns about a hospital-based company breaching COVID-19 guidelines. But Dudley NHS Trust, which runs Russell's Hall Hospital and facility management company Mighty, has sought to reassure patients and staff members following the concerns highlighted by Unite. Unite says it has identified a number of issues with the practices of Mighty, which is based within the hospital and is paid to look after the facility's upkeep. Concerns raised include social distancing is not happening, lack of ventilation, staff and visitors not signing in, failure to provide hand sanitizer, lack of security on site, and monitoring visitors to its premises. The premises of Mighty, which holds the facility management contract for the Dudley NHS Trust, is based in the hospital's estates department, which is away from patients. Unite says that the concerns have resulted in the Health and Safety Executive issuing a Notice of Contravention, a document that sets out health and safety laws that have been broken in relation to coronavirus safety. But rather than close the facility, the Health and Safety Executive has given Mighty time to improve its COVID procedures, said a Unite spokesman. Unite Regional Officer Sue Lowe said, "This is one of the worst workplaces I have attended as a union officer since the beginning of the pandemic. Unite welcomes the intervention of the HSE, but this should never have been necessary. This is a large, well-resourced company, and strict COVID secure policies and practices should have been in place for well over a year." In response, Mighty said it is working with the HSE on the issue. A company spokesman said, "The safety and well-being of employees and patients at the NHS Trust is our top priority."
Two solicitors from a firm based in Wolverhampton are facing disciplinary action in connection with an allegedly fraudulent quick sale property scheme. Kumari Banga Solicitors is being investigated by the industry regulator, which says clients lost huge sums of money after selling their homes through speedyproperty.co.uk. The Solicitors Regulation Authority has so far made 12 payments to their clients totalling almost £875,000 as part of the investigation. It is claimed sellers lost out on tens of thousands of pounds through the scheme as sale proceeds were funnelled elsewhere. Meena Kumari and Tina Kumari Banga, partners at the firm, which was based in Newhampton Road, Whitmoreens, are facing a hearing of the Solicitor's Disciplinary Tribunal in June over allegations they acted in conveyancing transactions they either knew or should have known were fraudulent and failed to protect their clients. They could not be contacted for comment. It comes as West Midlands Police continues to investigate separately Speedy Property, over which 8 people have been arrested and released pending further inquiries. The SRA was alerted after being approached by a number of Koomari Banga clients. A pensioner claimed he received just £68,000 from the £165,000 sale of his home in Wales. The allegations against the pair relate to a period between 2013 and 2017. It's alleged that they knew or ought to have known transactions bore a number of suspicious features, the hallmarks of fraud and or the hallmarks of money laundering, and that they failed to carry out proper inquiries, advise their clients and obtain their consent to make payments to third-party companies. The SRA said the solicitors would have the chance to respond to the allegations at the tribunal, which would then deliberate on whether or not misconduct has taken place, and if so, decide upon any relevant sanctions.
Attendance in the city's schools is now the highest it has been since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, and people are reminded to do all they can to help keep them COVID secure. Latest figures show that more than 95% of primary and 90% of secondary pupils are now back in school in Wolverhampton, as were nearly 86% of pupils in other provision. Overall, 92.31% of pupils were in attendance in Wolverhampton, above both the regional and national average. Brenda Weil, Wolverhampton's Deputy Director of Education, said, "It's great to see the overwhelming majority of pupils are now back in the classroom, which is where they need to be. Our schools have worked hard to provide safe learning environments for children and staff, and the number of cases recorded in schools has remained low over the last few weeks. We want to keep it that way, and as more children return, the onus is on us all to ensure we keep infection rates down. School staff, families and secondary aged pupils can do this by getting themselves tested twice a week for COVID-19, and everyone can play their part by following the hands, face and space guidance, washing their hands regularly, wearing a face covering on the school run and in school as required, and practicing social distancing from people they don't live with or are in a bubble with. If everyone does this, we have a great chance of keeping COVID-19 out of our classrooms and out of our homes and enabling even more people to return to school in the days and weeks ahead. Anyone aged 18 or over, as well as secondary school pupils and college students, can get a free rapid test if they don't have symptoms of COVID-19 and are asked to do so twice a week."
A public consultation on the regeneration of one of the largest brownfield sites in the region has been launched this week. The West Midlands Combined Authority and Sandwell Council are bringing forward a long-standing allocated housing site in Wensbury, currently known as Friar Park Urban Village, where up to 750 homes could be built. They want to hear the views of the community with the launch of a first phase of a public consultation. The proposed development includes a mix of new homes and open spaces with pedestrian, cycle and transport links to surrounding areas. The site covers over 27 hectares, making it one of the largest brownfield sites in the region. The Phase 1 consultation presents initial thoughts and options based on research and surveys undertaken alongside early engagement with key stakeholders. The 6-week public consultation ends at midnight on June the 20th. During this time, the local community is invited to attend drop-in public information days to view the proposals and speak to experts about the project. The events will be held at the Friar Park Millennium Centre, Friar Park Road, Wensbury, on May the 20th from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m, May the 21st from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m, and May the 22nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. There are several ways to take part in the consultation. Attend the public information days, view information and provide feedback on the website friarparkurbanvillage.co.uk, or speak to someone about the plans by calling the community helpline on 0800 0588 161. Questions and comments can be sent via email to hello@friarparkurbanvillage.co.uk or post to Free Post, Friar Park Urban Village. No stamp or further address details are required. The closing date for comments is June the 20th. A second consultation phase will take place in September to present how feedback has helped shape the development of the plans.
Volunteers are raising money to send vital oxygen supplies to India amid the growing COVID crisis in the country. The SNJ Charitable Trust, based in the iconic building of Lakshmi Sweets and Restaurant on Dudley Road, Blakenhall, Wolverhampton, has already paid for 100 cylinders and regulators to be sent to struggling hospitals where staff are battling to save lives amid an oxygen shortage. Organisers have set an ambitious £150,000 fundraising target to pay for hundreds more and help as many people as they can in the stricken country. Nina Julka, founder and chief executive of the Trust, said, "We are urging people and businesses to dig deep and support this appeal. So many people have lost their lives and so many more are gasping for breath. They need this equipment urgently. This is a challenging fundraising target, but what is life without a challenge? We just want to do everything we can to help." Nina said the Trust, which also has a team based in Delhi, was working closely with the High Commission of India and the Indian Red Cross to get the equipment to where it is needed as quickly as possible.
Now we head over to Mina, who asked us the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How long would it take to say the longest word? Question 2. What is the only English word to have the letters in alphabetical order? Question 3. What is the speed of a computer mouse measured in? Question 4. What is the technical name for Tommy Rumble? Question 5. What is the name given to the Cats World version of Corgi? And question 6. What do adults have that babies appear not to have? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Puzzling as always. Now we had some more local news, and kicking us off, it's Ian.
An old Black Country sewage works could finally be redeveloped after scaled-down plans for a new housing estate were submitted. Ruskin Properties has put forward a scheme for 132 homes at the former Caledonia Sewage Works in Lye, Stourbridge. The plans will see 2, 3 and 4 bedroom homes on the 9-acre site, split across 2 pieces of land either side of the River Stour. The 2-story homes will be a mix of semi-detached and detached dwellings. All of them will be for private rent. If the scheme, which is called Brickworks Caledonia, is given the go-ahead by planners at Dudley Council, it would bring an end to years of delays over the redevelopment of the land, which sits next to the Caledonia estate. It was originally earmarked for 141 homes in 2004, but site constraints prevented any scheme from being carried forward. Ruskin Properties bought the land in 2017 and at the end of 2020 revealed plans for 109 houses and 124 apartments. Following a public consultation, the current scale-down scheme has now been submitted. A design and access statement detailing the plans says of those who supported the development during consultation, the main reasons given were improved landscape and recreational opportunities. Those who opposed it raised concerns over a lack of infrastructure and the potential impact of the development on local services and facilities such as school capacity.
A petition by a Penn resident to block plans to build a new supermarket has received more than 100 signatures. Kiran Kula, who has lived in her Penn home for 20 years, was unhappy with the proposals put forward by discount supermarket Lidl for a store at the site of the Mercure Goldthorne Hotel, which could create 40 jobs. The proposals submitted to Wolverhampton Council for the scheme will see the hotel demolished along with the business centre and one home. Kieran and her family received a letter in the post detailing the plans and how to object to them. Following this, she penned a petition against the plans and began visiting residents and shop owners in Penn to speak to them about the proposal. Kieran said, "Not everyone has received the letter. The only way you can object is online, and for people who do not have access to the internet, particularly elderly people, this is really unfair. I visited more than 100 homes by myself. If I had time, I would have gone to even more. But not one of the people I spoke to wanted the plans to go ahead. I was really shocked. This is just a small attempt from myself to put our community's views across." A spokesman for Lidl said about the proposals, "We are delighted to have submitted plans to bring a new Lidl store to Wolverhampton. If granted, this would mark a multi-million pound investment in the area and the creation of around 40 new full and part-time jobs for the local community when the store opens. We look forward to receiving a decision in due course. The petition is currently awaiting decision."
A permanent memorial to women's cricket pioneer Rachel Hayhoe Flint has been planned for Lords. But the plan by Claire Connor, who will be the first woman to become Marylebone Cricket Club president, has been met with opposition from some members, according to The Times. Baroness Hayhoe Flint, who died in 2017 and was affectionately known as Our Rachel in her home city of Wolverhampton, captained England to the first ever Cricket World Cup title in 1973. While off the field, her tireless determination for equality laid the foundations for the opportunities presented to modern day players. The suggestion from Connor for a memorial in the form of a statue or gate, who takes office in October, has been met with opposition from some of the club's more traditional members, who say it smacks of gesture politics. Connor, a former England women's cricketer, told MCC members at their online forum meeting on Tuesday that, although a portrait of Hayhoe Flint hung in the pavilion, not enough had been done to commemorate her impact on the game. "She was so important to where the women's game is now. I think a statue or gate on the ground would be appropriate and fitting." Robert Griffiths QC, who chaired both MCC's Laws and its development committees, said, "Diversity is one thing, but a statue or gate has to be named on merit. As a player, you wouldn't put her in the same league as Don Bradman and Gary Sobers, even within the women's game." The club said it wanted to address the imbalance of public recognition in cricket, adding, "MCC recognises the contribution that many women cricketers have made to the game and intends to mark these roles in perpetuity."
A park described by locals as a green oasis in Dudley is set to celebrate its centenary later this year. The well-loved Marsh Park, which is positioned between North Lane and Seegers Lane in Briley Hill, will be marking 100 years since it first opened in September. A celebration is planned for September to mark the park's 100th anniversary on Friday, the 17th of September 2021. Frank Chamberlain, who is chairman of the Friends of Marsh Park group and other volunteers in the group, are planning to host a huge picnic in the park to mark the occasion. Everyone is welcome to attend the celebration, including old and new residents, with people being encouraged to share their memories of the park and its history. Alfred Marsh of Marsh and Baxter, a famous butcher, bacon and sausage company in the area, donated the land of Marsh Park to Briley Hill. The land spans across 4 acres and has a unique elevated position overlooking the surrounding areas to the west. Marsh Park was partly built by First World War soldiers, manned by Home Guard and Royal Observer Corps in the Second World War, with a lookout post, and used for Home Guard and Civil Defence Group practice after the war. It was officially opened on September the 17th, 1921, and some of the work was actually completed by soldiers returning home. Heidi Marsh-Gayton, Director of Public Realm at Dudley Council, said, "Dudley Council is pleased to be supporting the Friends of Marsh Park with the organisation of their centenary celebrations. As the event is scheduled for September, it is too early to know if COVID restrictions will be in place, but we're putting safety measure plans in place and will ensure the event is in accordance with the latest government guidance."
A new dawn is coming for a community church as it prepares to reopen its newly renovated doors to the public. The New Testament Church of God in Bilston has undergone a substantial redevelopment of its facilities ahead of a return to Republic worship on the Sunday, 9th of May. Work done on the 60-year-old church includes a new stage area with a pulpit at the front and a fully renovated entrance to the church, including the removal of steps from the front door and a new entranceway. Other work at the church on Wellington Road includes a complete upgrade of the community area, with new carpet laid and cafe area for public use set up. In total, the redevelopment work has cost £200,000, with a large majority taken from donations to the church, plus grants and loans. Pastor Albert Watson has been at the forefront of the work at the church, having been pastor for 5 years and attended as a boy, and said the work has taken longer than planned because of the pandemic. He said the effects of the pandemic were enormous for us as we started this work in February last year and it was meant to be completed by September. However, the pandemic meant that for 6 months we couldn't do anything as we were literally closed down. Then the builders were able to do limited work between the two lockdowns. Despite this, we were able to reflect and look back at different ways and means. And although the pandemic has had a profound effect on the timescale, we've got there in the end. Mr. Watson said, he wanted the new church and cafe, which opens in June, to be a community hub and something for everyone, whether that was for worship or coming in for a cup of tea.
Now it's time for some Beacon Voices. And this week we hear from sight loss advisor Mina, who tells us all about Marcus Gunn syndrome.
Hello, my name is Mina. I'm a sight loss advisor at Beacon Centre for the Blind, supporting people with sight loss. Today I'll be talking about Marcus Gunn syndrome. So what is it? Marcus Gunn phenomenon is a rare genetic disorder that is usually present at birth. It is characterised by the movement of one upper eyelid in a rapid rising motion each time the jaw moves. Other eye abnormalities and vision difficulties may also occur. It is named after Scottish ophthalmologist Robert Marcus Gunn. Can Marcus Gunn be cured? Treatment is only necessary if there is an eye or vision problem. Although some people choose to have the condition corrected for cosmetic reasons, treatment for Marcus Gunn syndrome usually corrects the condition with no long-term problems. What causes Marcus Gunn pupil? So the most common cause of Marcus Gunn pupil is a lesion of the optical nerve between the retina and the optic chiasm due to glaucoma or severe retinal disease or due to multiple sclerosis.
Thank you for that. Now we head over to some more local news, and starting us off, it's Liz.
A Peaky Blinders-themed bar and restaurant is on course for opening in Dudley Town Centre in the summer. The office will be on the ground floor of the former Station Hotel in Castle Hill. The hotel has been bought by Birmingham businessman Stephen Burry, who lives near Hagley with his family. It will become the Station Hotel and Banqueting. The hotel in Castle Hill is currently closed and the new owners are carrying out refurbishment work. Tony McKeon from Birmingham will operate the office. He said the hotel and his business would work closely together to build on the opportunity to offer Peaky Blinders themed weekends, so people visiting the nearby Black Country Living Museum could stay in the area. The bar and restaurant will feature original Peaky Blinders artwork from artist John Jones, which Mr. McKeon has collected over the last 6 years. The price paid for the hotel has not been disclosed, but the refurbishment is expected to cost more than £1 million. We are working towards opening both the office and the hotel around June 21, said Mr. McKeon. The 1920s features of the hotel will be retained in the refurbishment.
A charity's much-loved narrowboat has been given a facelift thanks to the generosity of former Goodyear workers. Wildside Activity Centre in Wolverhampton has received a donation of £15,000 from the 5344 Transport and General Workers Union Benevolent Fund. The money has enabled the Whitmore Rheans-based Outdoor and Environmental Education Centre to renovate its narrowboat Triblissa, which is regularly used to offer canal trips and excursions to people of all ages and abilities living in the city. The donation will also fund 3 boat trips per year over the next 5 years for students at Penhall School, which has received regular support from the former Goodyear employees. Tony Stewart, a senior volunteer at Wildside who helped coordinate the renovation work, said, "We are extremely grateful for the generosity of the 5344 Transport and General Workers Union. Triblissa is a much used resource by the people and communities here in Wolverhampton, and without this latest donation, we would have found it incredibly difficult to carry out such extensive work." Chairman of the 5344 Transport and General Workers Union Benevolent Fund, Cyril Barrett, added, "We have a long-standing positive relationship with Wildside and Penhall Special School. The trustees and management committee have been greatly impressed with the vital work both charities are doing, supporting so many children and their families in Wolverhampton and the Black Country. The refurbishment of the narrowboat Triblissa will create a proud living legacy to all of the ex-members of the charity fund." A small celebration took place to formally relaunch the Triblissa following its refurbishment programme, with attendees including former Goodyear worker Keith Garrett and Mr Barrett.
A Dudley man is celebrating after learning he has won £30,000 cash prize with the People's Postcode Lottery. Adrian Goodacre's postcode DY20YD was announced as a winner with the lottery on Thursday. The 56-year-old first learned he had won the prize during a video call with People's Postcode Lottery ambassador Daniel Johnson. When a prize check with his winnings was revealed, he said, "Fantastic! Wow, that is superb! A lot of zeros. That is bonkers." He was joined on the video call by his partner, Jenny Gardner, a local school teacher, who said, "It is awesome, completely overwhelming." Adrian, who is a self-employed maintenance worker, had a few ideas for spending his winnings. When asked what his plans were, he said, "Lots, lots. There's lots of things we need to do, so we will sort things out. There's lots of work that needs doing on the house. The garden, front and back, needs to be done. I might even change my car." He also had a treat for the couple in mind, adding, "Get a holiday booked and do that. Obviously, it's been difficult with everything that's been going on, but if we just have a holiday in the UK, it would be something to look forward to." Daniel Johnson said, "A massive congratulations to Adrian and Jenny. I'm so pleased for them. I'm sure they'll be making plans for spending the winnings, and I hope they get to take that holiday soon."
A Black Country borough has been ranked the cheapest place to buy a curry anywhere in the country. Wolverhampton beat the national average price by £4, with customers able to buy a chicken tikka and pilau rice for £6.67. In comparison, the most expensive place to buy a curry was in Cambridge, with a price of £13.42. Wolverhampton was also ranked third cheapest for buying a 12-inch pepperoni pizza, with a price of £6.83, coming in behind Leeds and Preston. The most expensive place to buy the same pizza was Swansea, with a price of £13.09. Birmingham was ranked the most expensive place to buy chicken chow mein, with a price of £7.75. The findings were revealed by netvoucherscodes.co.uk.
ITV chaser Paul Sinner is the latest name to be added to the eagerly awaited Stourbridge Comedy Festival this summer. The festival will take place throughout August and early September at Katie Fitzgerald's in Wollaston. The star of the hit ITV quiz show and award-winning stand-up will headline a show at Katie's on Saturday, September 4th. The festival is being put on by Black Country comedy promoters Funny Beesness, who also announced this week that crowd favourite Troy Hawk would be topping the bill at Katie's on Saturday, August 28th. Also confirmed to appear so far are Ed Byrne, Hal Cruttendon, Rhys James, Shappi Khorsandi, Sean Walsh and Simon Evans, who will close the festival topping the bill at a show on Saturday, September 18th. One more big name is being announced in the coming days, with comedy fans urged to sign up to the mailing list at funnybusiness.co.uk if they want to find out first. Wayne Bees from Dudley, director of Funny Business, said, "Paul Sinner has consistently been one of our most popular acts since we started putting on shows, so if previous gigs are anything to go by, the chase will most certainly be on for tickets. Most people will know him as a quizzer, but he is, without question, a brilliant and award-winning comic as well, and definitely worth seeing live."
Now it's time to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Hello again, everybody. It's Roger again with another batch of interesting facts to amaze and surprise you. So here we go. Did you know that the longest English word in the world is 189,819 letters long? And you'll just have to believe me, because I ain't going to say it even if I could. It's actually the full name of a protein with the nickname of Tintin. And even if I could say it, it would take 3.5 hours to say. The word 40 is the only number written in the English language whose letters are in alphabetical order. Go on, think about it and try it out and see if you can find another. I couldn't. An absolutely, completely useless bit of information, but at least you should be able to amaze a few folks over a coffee or something else, eh? The speed of a computer mouse is measured in mickeys. And no, I'm not taking the mickey either. Technically, a mickey is 1/200th of an inch. The speed can be measured in pixels per mickey, referring to how many pixels the cursor on the screen moves when the physical mouse is moved one mickey. Where do I get these things from? I don't know. Nearly 6 times as many people speak English as a second language than as a first language. There are a full 2 billion people around the world who speak English as a second language, according to research anyway. That's approximately slightly more than 5.7 times the number of native speakers, which is around 350 million people. Now, we all get this from now and again. When your tum gurgles, there's a proper name for it. The technical name for the noise your stomach makes when it growls is a bulbar ignus, and it occurs when gas moves around your intestines. Of course, bulbar ignus, sooner or later, leads to flatulence, and you know the common name for that one. Here's one little fact for cat lovers, because there's a cat version of a corgi. This lowest long pushy is called a munchkin cat, and like the corgi and the dachshund, its short legs and long body are the result of genetic mutation. And finally for this week, babies have no kneecaps. Really? Well, sort of. If you x-ray a baby's legs, you likely won't see anything where the kneecaps should be, or if you do, it'll just be small smudgy spots of cartilage, and they harden over time. Kneecaps take an especially long time to form, about 3 to 5 years. And because cartilage doesn't show up on x-rays, babies appear to have no kneecaps. That lack of hard kneecaps is a good thing, because the spongy tissue serves to absorb some of the abuse toddlers take during their crawling months, and from their frequent falls. So there you go, folks. I do love finding these items to share with you every week. It never ceases to amaze me the things that there are there out there to find and to learn about. I'm so amazed, I'll have to go and have a lie down. So I'll just say bye for now. See you next week. Ta-ra a bit.
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead starts off dry but will become more unsettling and wet as the week progresses. Temperatures will be hovering around 14 to 16 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:08 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:02 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 14th of May through to Sunday 16th of May, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees. On Monday 17th of May, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees. On Tuesday 18th of May, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. And on Wednesday 19th of May and Thursday 20th of May, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update. And now it's time for another edition of Sounds of Nature, which this week is presented by Mina.
The crow that we are most familiar with is the carrion crow. It is completely black and makes a hoarse, cawing sound. Carrion crows make big nests out of twigs, rags, bones, and anything else they find. They do not nest in colonies like rooks, but are mostly solitary. Carrion crows are birds of farmland and grassland, but are extremely adaptable and will come to gardens for food, often seeming to be quite fearless. They feed on dead animals, as their name suggests, invertebrates, and grain, as well as stealing eggs and chicks from other birds' nests.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we have Ian with the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. West Brom have been relegated from the Premier League after losing 3-1 at Arsenal. The Baggies headed to the Emirates knowing they had to win to avoid their drop into English football's second tier becoming official. But a stunning Matheus Pereira goal wasn't enough, with strikes from Emile Smith-Rowe, Nicolas Pepe and Willian seeing the Gunners to a 3-1 win. That scoreline massively flattered the hosts, though, with the Baggies putting in a really battling display in the capital. Sam Allardyce's side dominated the opening 20 minutes, but they couldn't make that good play count, with the hosts then going on at the break with a 2-goal cushion, thanks to a quick-fire double from Smith-Rowe and Pepe. Pereira gave the Baggies hope of a fight back when he scored a magical goal after the interval. The Brazilian picked up the ball in his own half and carried it 50 yards before firing past Bernd Leno. Allardyce's men then pushed for an equaliser with Darnell Furlong going close. But in the 90th minute, Willian sealed Albion's fate when he curled in a free kick from 25 yards. The Baggies secured promotion to the top flight last season under Slaven Bilic, but will return to the second tier in the next campaign after amassing just 26 points from 35 games so far, having seen the Croatian replaced by Sam Allardyce midway through the campaign. Their result at Arsenal means that Albion joined Sheffield United in heading to the Championship for the 2021-22 season. The remaining relegation spot looks almost certain to be filled by Fulham, who themselves need a miraculous run of results to avoid the drop. Albion still have 3 games remaining this season, one of which will be played in front of home support, the only chance fans will get to see this current side in the top flight. They take on Liverpool before welcoming fans back for the clash with West Ham. Their final game of the season will be at Elland Road, which will also have fans in attendance, taking on Leeds United. Wolves' last game without fans at Molineux saw Morgan Gibbs-White fire home at the death to clinch a dramatic 2-1 win over 10-man Brighton. Coming back from behind, Gibbs White grabbed his first Premier League goal after Lewis Dunk's costly red card for the Seagulls. Dunk earlier put Graham Potter's outfit in front as he took advantage of shoddy marking from a corner. Nuno Espirito Santo's side, though, were handed the initiative as the defender tugged down Fabio Silva, and they took advantage. Superb substitute Adama Traore levelled things up before Gibbs White, having spurned a glorious chance a couple of minutes beforehand, came up with the winner. Brighton attacker Niall Morpay was sent off after the final whistle for voicing his displeasure towards referee Jonathan Moss. Now Wolves have trips to both Tottenham and Everton before ending the campaign, with fans finally returning at home against Manchester United.
Now we hear from Colin, who's exploring the world of superstitions.
Hello, I'm Colin Lawrence. Do you avoid walking under ladders or stepping on cracks in the pavement? Or are you far too rational to believe in old wives' tales? Superstition follows us everywhere. We unapologetically cross our fingers and toes and, well, whatever else we can, when we're in need of a little extra luck. While some of these rituals might sound a little odd, you won't catch us making any big commitments on Friday the 13th. Forget anti-aging creams. You can save yourself a fortune and stay forever young by carrying an acorn in your pocket. Owing to its long life, the oak tree is believed to provide longevity and also ward off illness. Now, whatever you do, don't eat lettuce if you want to have children. An old book on plant lore suggests that men should avoid salads if they want to start a family. It seems that lettuce is detrimental to childbearing because it's a sterile plant. Who knew? Anyway, you should never give gloves as a present. Well, you can, but make sure that you receive something in return. Otherwise, you'll both have bad luck. Gloves feature in a whole host of superstitions dating as far back as medieval times, when knights in armour, for some reason, wore a lady's glove in their helmets when competing in jousting tournaments. Everybody knows that it's bad luck to drop a glove and then pick it up yourself. The reasoning behind this relates to the custom of a lady deliberately dropping a glove in the hope that a prospective suitor will pick it up. It seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it, that opening an umbrella inside brings bad luck, since it presents a risk of breaking valuable items or poking someone in the eye. That's not the reason, apparently. It's because umbrellas shade us from the sun, they're thought to be somehow magical. So, when an umbrella's opened inside, out of the way of the sun's rays, guess what? It offends the sun god. I didn't even know there was a sun god, did you? Well, it seems there are lots. Most of them originate in Greek, Roman, and Egyptian mythology. So you learn something every day, don't you? Oh, and the next time you're off to attend an important meeting, don't forget to look out for a goat. Yes, that's right, a goat. Although goats have been associated with debauchery, lust, and the devil for thousands of years, they are also believed to absorb any evil or harm that may cross your path. And that's why it's considered good luck to encounter a goat when travelling to an important occasion. Ladies, let me ask you this. Do you ever get an annoying fold in your skirt when you've sat on it in a strange way? Well, you'll be pleased to discover that should this happen to you, you're in with more than a good chance of receiving a new dress. Yes, it was once a common belief that if the lower edge of a woman's skirt somehow became inexplicably turned up to form a kind of pocket, good fortune, such as the gift of a new dress, would come to the owner. Shh. Quiet, isn't it? An awkward silence means that an angel is passing over. This rather whimsical explanation for a lull in a conversation is attributed to Dylan Thomas's Portrait of the Artist, which includes the line, "A host of angels must be passing by. What a silence there is." On New Year's Eve in Spain, Not everyone kisses as the clock strikes 12. Superstitious revellers make sure that they eat 12 grapes at midnight to ensure that they'll have 12 months of good luck. An old wives' tale says that the best day to go to hospital is Wednesday, and Monday is the best day to leave. You should avoid Saturday, which apparently is the worst day to arrive or leave, because it means that you'll soon be back. Now, here's a good trick if you can do it. Pass a newborn baby through a rind of a cheese. No, I'm not making this stuff up. In medieval England, expectant mothers made a groaning cheese. This was a large wheel of cheese that matured for 9 months as the baby grew. When the groaning time, or birth, came, the cheese would be shared out amongst the family, and when nothing but the outer rind was left, the baby would be passed through the wheel of cheese on christening day to be blessed with a long and prosperous life. And finally, do please remember to keep a hot cross bun for a year. Much like the tradition of saving a slice of wedding cake after the ceremony, this slightly odd superstition is supposed to bring good fortune. Hot cross buns were originally eaten at ancient pagan festivals, but without the cross, which was added much later by Christians to ward off evil spirits. Baked on Good Friday morning, a hot cross bun was displayed in the house for a year to ensure good luck. If it works, well, that's great, but it probably won't do your teeth much good if you actually try to eat it 12 months later.
Now we head over to Mina, who asked us the answers to this week's quiz.
Here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How long would it take to say the longest word? The answer, 3.5 hours. Question 2. What is the only English word to have the letters in alphabetical order? The answer here is 40. Question 3. What is the speed of a computer mouse measured in? The answer here is Mickey's. Question 4. What is the technical name for Tommy Grumble? The answer is Borborygmus. Question 5. What is the name given to the Cat's World version of Corgi? And the answer here is Munchkin Cat. And finally, question 6. What do adults have that babies appear not to have? And the answer is kneecaps. How did you do? Brilliantly, I'm sure. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. Ada Isabel Jones, 1900 to 1976, was a remarkable Black Country woman whose hard life was likely instrumental in her dry wit and encyclopedia of homespun philosophies. What's done's done and can't be undone, eloquently explained her theory of inevitability. He's allers in the leather where he should be in the lane, was her coruscating observation of someone not being in the right place at the right time. And a particular favourite of mine in her describing someone's parsimony was, he'd skin a bibble for halfpenny and ruin a tanner knife. Wonderful stuff, although one would benefit from being born within 5 miles of Dudley to understand a jot of it. Widowed in 1945, she raised 3 children on her own in utter penury before the days of social welfare. Upon marriage, Ada Isabel Jones had changed her name to Fisher, so there you have the connection. You see, Ada was my paternal grandmother, my dear granny, and I was privileged to share her life right until I stood by her bedside as she passed peacefully away, smiling at me serenely to her end. She was a wise old bird, was Granny, and nearly half a century after her loss, it was her observations on déjà vu that still resonate in her expression, "What goes around comes around." Oh, Granny, how right you were, how right you were. Back in the days when Granny was a youngster, the industries of the West Midlands may have already been touched by the chill wind of slow decline, but they were still largely in full flow. The mighty Stourbridge glass industry was buoyant, and she would have been familiar with the likes of Stewart, Webb Corbett and others. She would have only been in her 30s when Stevens and Williams took the royal warrant to become Royal Brierley. She loved the stuff, and like many others of her generation in these parts, ended her days with a modest but treasured accumulation of locally made glasses, vases and trinkets. Not expensive, though that's hardly the point. But the aforementioned chill wind was destined to blow hard, and not just around the Black Country. Leaping forward to the year 2012, at which time a certain Mr. Ian Dury had already become a valued friend following my induction into the world of glass a few years beforehand, I was by now a trustee of the British Glass Foundation, a body dedicated to securing a new home for the internationally renowned Stourbridge Glass Collection, following the closure of its former repository at Broadfield House Glass Museum in King Swynford. As the official biographer for Ian's extraordinary project to recreate the iconic Roman cameo glass Portland vase, I was invited to launch the book at the 2012 International Festival of Glass and Biennale, a biannual event that has for the past dozen years or more helped rightfully project little old Stourbridge into the limelight as a showcase for glass and its practitioners. Indeed, as I compile this modest missive, plans are already being formulated for the next International Festival of Glass to be held over the August bank holiday in 2019. But for context as to how this should all relate to the land of Banner Cymru I Dreigioch, the Welsh flag, a little more about Ian. A lifelong glass worker to his bootstraps, he is now enjoying a well-earned retirement, but is still an active volunteer. For some, like Ian, glass is a way of life. A man whose pride in his industry is matched only by his passion for his Celtic roots, he commenced his vocation in 1968 as an apprentice glass decorator. That's the generic term for any form of finishing such as cutting or engraving, at Stewart Crystal. But not in Stourbridge. This was in his native Aberbar Goed, South Wales. How so? The 1960s were a grim period for Wales, with many of its coal mines and steel plants, vital to its economy, gone or scheduled for closure. When few thought it could get much worse, unimaginable depths of despair were plumbed by the Aberfan disaster of 1966. New industries were drawn to the area, including glass, and, intriguingly, the Royal Mint, but that's another tale. Anyway, Stewart sought the extra production capacity and, for various other reasons, also wanted a separate facility away from Stourbridge. Operations started off with 6 apprentices in the basements of the local council offices in Aberbar Goed. Ian was not part of the 6, but was invited to join when one left. Stewart then purchased a factory site nearby that was named Pengam Glassworks, albeit being nowhere near Pengam. At yearly intervals, more apprentices were taken on. In the late 1960s, several extensions were added to accommodate glassmaking. It engaged up to 100 workers and became one of the most respected employers in the Rumney Valley until its closure under the Waterford regime at the turn of the millennium. Owing to the success of the second shop at Pengam, Ian was invited to Bulth Wells, just a few miles westward of the barn, to develop the purpose-built factory that had once been occupied by Webb Corbett, another Stourbridge emigre. Ian declined, but instead found another site in the Wye Valley that, with considerable success, he developed as a tourist craft centre based around the Stewart brand. Sand-engraved glassware was produced on site, and there was a gilding division at Chepstow. Around 15 staff were employed before it, too, fell victim to closure under Waterford. Meanwhile, back in the Midlands, the firm of Stewart, a giant in the world of Stourbridge glass, was the last to close in 2001 with the loss of 220 jobs. Yes, there are still people making glass in Stourbridge, but following the painfully slow demise of the industry, this was the last of what one might call the heavyweights, and its loss was sore. Yet, lest we forget, its loss in the Principality left an equally raw wound. Ah, but I fear I may be close to being accused of rambling dissolutely. So perhaps 'tis time to draw the strings of my communique to a denouement in which all of the threads melt seamlessly together. Ian Jury, native of Wales and former devotee of Stewart's Glassworks that had bases there which he helped create, instigator of the 2012 replica of one of the most celebrated pieces of Roman cameo ever made, the creation of a brand new world-class facility to house the Stourbridge Glass Collection, the next international festival of glass that will feature the new museum as part of the hub of activity centres. Gosh, how much more? Okay, here it is. Ian and his team crafted the 2012 vase at the Ruskin Centre in Amblecote. Formerly Webb Corbett, who once also had an outreach in Wales, this was latterly Royal Dalton before its reincarnation as Ruskin, where Ian was heritage officer until his retirement, and which is now the focus of the International Festival of Glass. Ian has graciously gifted the 2012 Portland vase and associated artifacts in perpetuity to the new museum just along the road, because he feels that's its rightful home. This new museum was, in association with its partners and developers, created by the British Glass Foundation, a feat of which, as a trustee from the outset, I am inordinately proud. And what is the significance of this new museum? Go straight to the back of the class, if you haven't already guessed. It is located in High Street, Wordsley, near Stourbridge, and it is the former home of Stewart Crystal. What goes around comes around. Ah, Granny, how right you were, how very right you were. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!